8:38, man. We're gonna start the show.
Yeah, we can guys finish. Tell me when you're ready
Stop
to start.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, here we go.
Do it.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Who's
one.
The best show here?
Tech Show.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show.
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Like an inch and a half
yes,
long.
That's right.
My wife doesn't care.
I use the bathroom.
P.O. Showtime.
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNTS.org. And ICChallengeAnalytics.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 837. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy Wednesday, man.
We have Rich.
Which I got to find the right button to push. Live from the Orlando Outpost.
And we have Joe.
Mostly here tonight.
Good, good. So I will... I have some stuff, but I'm going to let you guys talk first, or whoever needs to go first, leave due to other things. So go ahead. Give us what you got.
You know, I'm trying to think tech-wise what I got to talk about, and I'm jumping in assuming I'm the first one to go. And as all weeks happen, I was like, oh, that's Linux news. I got to talk about that. And then I forgot. But... yeah, I got a cheapy, not quite a, it's a 4K action camera, and I was about to unbox it.
Well, you just got it.
Yeah, I just walked in the door a few minutes before the show started. I woofed down a Pizza Hut pizza.
What, did you get that from Cyber Monday?
No, it wasn't a Cyber Monday deal, it's just like an everyday Amazon deal.
Okay. And
so I'll tell you why. My daughter wants... she's been using my Canon T2i, which I'm guessing it's a 10-year-old camera at this point, the T2i. And she wanted... what is it? It's the Canon G7 X Mark... she wanted the Mark II. I'm like, oh, why don't you get the Mark III? Because it shoots 4K video. And I'm like, and then I'll borrow it. And then I'm like, yeah, that kind of sucks, giving somebody a gift telling me you want to borrow it. And it really, for the $200 or $300 difference between the models and the quality of the 4K video out of it, it really wasn't worth spending the money to get that feature. So I think I'm going to get her the Mark II, the G7, I think it's G7X Mark II. And I figured I would try the $20 4K action camera. It may totally suck, but I figured it would be worth giving a shot.
Wait, what's the price difference between the two?
I think it's like $200 to $300, depending on where you're looking.
Wow, so you got a $20 action cam.
Which could totally suck.
Well, I'm just curious. I'd be curious to see how it compares to the other one, you know, the quality-wise and everything. I mean, did you get a good deal, or?
It was $20, the action cam. I didn't get the other...
or is it worth every nickel of that $20?
Well, you know what? If it totally sucks, I'll bring it to a range, I'll shoot it, and I'll make a video. And maybe I'll make a dollar off that video. But I'll feel better.
Yeah, let us know how it works. What are you using for your YouTube videos anyway?
Yeah, I'm the Tyler Hoovy of tech and YouTube.
What camera are you currently using for your YouTube videos?
I'm using my Note 8.
Cool.
So, yeah, I'm shooting everything on the Note 8, which, you know, will give you 1K, you know, HD, as they say. It does, some of the slow-mo is okay, but it only gives you, like, there's a super slow-mo, but it's so short it's ridiculous. And there's a slow-mo, but it kind of goes regular speed and then into the slow-mo, as opposed to giving you the slow-mo immediately. Which, you know, when you're shooting a machine gun, you want to get the slow-mo immediately, see the casings coming out of it and stuff like that. And unfortunately, a lot of the shots I have didn't trigger the slow-mo at the right time. It doesn't happen as soon as you push the button. So I don't think this does. So realistically, what I would like is, you know, a GoPro that'll do 120 frames a second at, you know, 4K, because then you can slow it down to quarter speed, or, you know, 120 frames a second at 1K or 2K, because then you can have high quality video and you can do a slow-mo with it that's really good. But
what's
so
the
far,
brand?
Shrinkwrap looks good. All right, so this is the DB Power, which I guess if you're a database guy, that means a lot to you. It's and it says dbpower.co.uk, and it's the EX7000 Pro, and it comes with apparently two batteries. I haven't opened it yet.
Well, send me an email as soon as you decide that the thing sucks.
You're saying it's certain that it's going to suck?
No. I mean, if it turns out to be awesome, send me an email even quicker.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's no hot flash sale on Amazon. They're there. But
yeah, it's $19.50. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, but make sure you use my affiliate link if you buy it. So I get, you know, the two cents off it, because I get like 3%.
Does it come with a mount and everything?
Does it have a standard mounting hole?
Yeah, I believe it's got a quarter 20 on the back.
Oh, the picture they have like has it in this like case and everything, and like looks like it's ready to be mounted onto something. So it's just the camera. It's not all that other stuff that they show you in the main picture, is it?
I'm like forcibly sliding the box open now. It's like the box drew a suction. Okay, so it's got a housing on it. I guess in California it would say that it's carcinogenic, because the interior is giving off some sort of odor. Hopefully the bird doesn't fall over.
Oh crap, it does come with all that stuff.
And it's still only $20.
Okay, yeah, there is a butt-ton load of little plastic baggies of different GoPro-ish type mounts in layers.
Well, record something real quick.
Dude, I gotta check where the cards are. Like I said, I just walked in, man.
Okay.
Alright.
Well, my dad sent me his old laptop to try and figure out what was wrong with it. Because every time you turned it on, it would get right past the press F2 to get to the BIOS, and it would start beeping. A continuous tone. It was
bad
annoying
memory.
As hell.
Bad memory?
That was the first thing I checked. Believe me, that was the first thing I checked. And it was not the answer. Any other guesses?
One long beep?
One long
is
beep.
Is that a bad BIOS clock?
Nope.
A stuck key?
A stuck keyboard.
A stuck key?
Yes. The entire keyboard is screwed. They spilled coffee on it. But yeah, it was coming across as a stuck key that was causing it to not boot at all.
How did you find that out, though?
Well, the first thing I did was pull. It had two RAM sticks, so I pulled one of the RAM sticks and tried to boot it up. You know, same thing happened. Pulled the battery, same thing happened. Pulled the other RAM stick and replaced it with the first one. Same thing happened. And so then I looked up a video on YouTube on how to replace the keyboard and completely pulled off the keyboard, thinking that wasn't going to do it, and I was going to have to take it apart further and like take a toothbrush to the motherboard or something. But with the keyboard off, it booted right up.
But you don't have a replacement keyboard, right?
No, I don't. But they're only like $9 for a replacement keyboard, and I already gave my dad a replacement laptop. So, yes, this is older, but I'll find a use for it.
Oh, okay. Because I was gonna say, I thought you were gonna say, yeah, I put in a new keyboard. I'm like, damn, you got replacement laptop keyboards laying around your house?
Shoot. Well, I'll have to check the compatibility because we got some old Toshibas floating around. I don't know if they're the exact same keyboard, but I will check before I purchase.
Okay, the camera powered up.
And then it explodes, right?
I'm trying to get the hymen off the lens here. Okay, I removed the hymen.
So is that replacement keyboard you said you'd get for like $9? Is that the exact model keyboard?
Yeah, looking on eBay. It says it's new, so $9 for that. And then I can't find the original power supply for it, so I was using the one off my other laptop. But it's one a little overpowered for it. It takes a 3.2 amp, and I was using like a 6.2. So, but both are 19 volts, so I wasn't overly worried about it.
That charges it twice as fast, and then it gives it a speed boost too, right?
Yeah, the battery doesn't work, so no charging involved. But yeah, I might give it a speed boost.
So the battery doesn't work, the keyboard doesn't work.
And speaking of the batteries not working, the battery that was in the camera is dead. I'll try battery number two.
And besides that, unless I'm going to give it to one of my kids, it doesn't really need a keyboard. I'll just use an external.
Yeah, that's true.
And that still makes it more powerful than the current laptop we're using as a set-top box for the TV, because that's an old Toshiba C655. C655.
How old is that?
Oh, I think it's got to be coming up on like 9 or 10 years.
Wow.
Maybe a little older.
He got his use out of it though, didn't he?
Oh, no, I was talking about the C655 being that old. I don't know how old the L755 is, but it's got to be pretty old since it's only got USB 2.0 on it.
Right, but still, he got good use out of it, though, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, now, it lasted a long time.
Did he tell you he spilled coffee on it, or did...
Oh, they did mention having spilled coffee on it.
Wow.
So I thought the motherboard was bad, so I gave him a different laptop, and it sat on my shelf for 6 months-ish, and then I finally got bored and decided to give it a shot.
How much of a pain in the butt was it to take apart?
I mean, the parts that I took apart on it weren't difficult at all. It's got two doors in the back, one for the hard drive and one for the RAM. And those came right off, and then it's really one screw on the bottom and then four screws on the top to remove the keyboard. And it all came apart. I didn't have to take apart the entire frame or anything.
Okay, so I recorded something. That battery went flat. I got to pull the SD card out and check it out, and I'll have to let you know another time because Dor wants me early.
Well, I see how it is. Joe wants to know the quality. We ain't got time for that. Dor wants you to come scratch his back. You're all over that.
I'll type a message in the IRC or something like that when I figure it out.
All right. Well, but, have a good time. Thank you.
Where did you get that audio that says, oh, it's only an inch and a half, but she's okay with that?
Did the I play that?
Audio? Yes, yes.
That would have to be... Oh, man. That would have to be...
You gotta, like, marry that up with, you know, the meat in my mouth.
This
like
one?
An inch and a half long. Right. My wife doesn't care.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I forgot that part was on there. The answer, I'm like, it was just, the wife doesn't care. Oh, yeah. Alright. Oh.
Alrighty, guys. I'll see you in IRC land. I got to get running.
All right. Have a good time. Thank you. Oh, the link for the camera. Yeah. On the Amazon website. I will post that in the IRC there. Did you see the link for the camera, Joe?
No, I do not see the link for the camera.
No, I mean, did you need the link for the camera?
Oh, yes, please. If you could drop that here, that would be great.
Where's here? Mumble Chan?
Yeah,
you don't come spending
your money until I give you
I
like
wanted
a
Mumble.
Yeah, I hope you guys can wait a day or two until I do a little bit of a review on it.
Yeah,
okay.
It's got high reviews on Amazon, it looks like.
Yeah, but that could be all family members.
Yeah, I could. All 126 family members, right?
Well, you know, in China.
So, what's a one-star review say about it? Great price for the features. Would like to see faster write speeds. Finally got a chance to put this thing to test. Used underwater in a pool and out hiking. The underwater case worked great and kept it perfectly dry while allowing control over the camera. However, I dropped my originally 4-star review to 1-star because both batteries this came with only lasted about 4 minutes.
What only lasts about 4 minutes?
The batteries. That's what this person said regarding their batteries. Another person said similar thing. They don't hold the charge longer than 15 minutes. Although that's the only one star reviews that are out there. So two people had a bad experience with the battery.
I don't know. Can you hook it straight up to power and leave it running?
I have no idea. Battery life is complete garbage. Wi-Fi doesn't connect. Sound quality is also garbage. So that's what they...
Yeah, basically any camera, I expect the sound quality on the camera itself to be garbage. That's what they make external mics for.
I only saw those two people complaining about, well, three people complaining about battery life out of all, I've been looking through all the bad reviews, so... I mean, for $20, I suspect the battery life may not be that great. There's two batteries it comes with.
Yeah, $20 for a 4K camera, something's got to be wrong.
The does sound too good to be true, right?
It usually is.
And it comes with a lot of shit, too.
Like $20 worth of shit?
Well, it's got... I mean, obviously, it's got like a charging cable. What does it come with? I don't even know what half that stuff is. Well, you see the link? You see the picture? Like, if you go down, it's got all these, like...
I'm going to have to look at it in a little bit. I got to jump on this call. I will be back if you guys are still here.
All right. Yeah, well, there we go. Well, you have anything, Pat, or should I start winging away? Pat? They got him. I guess they got him. Well, maybe he will be able to pop back in a little bit. We shall see. But just flying solo. Woo. So what happened? I've been spending an awful lot of time in Google services. Yay. Google services seems to be having weekly problems. Google Cloud Computing is what I'm talking about. GCP, Google Cloud Platform. It's about once a week, one of their regions has issues. It's usually our east region that they have network problems or GKE problems. So it's been a little bit of a painful experience compared to AWS. When we moved in AWS, I think the whole couple of years that we were completely in AWS, I only recall a severe outage once or maybe twice. But with Google, the past couple of months, like, it was getting bad there for a while, like every week on a Friday. Or Friday was, it might start on a Thursday, but usually by Friday we'd start having like predictable problems for some reason and have to shift traffic to the west as opposed to in the east. And so that growing pains. But I gotta say, we manage both AWS and Google Cloud services through CloudFormation on AWS and Terraform in GCP. I found that the Google documentation and the way that they implement stuff is just a little more approachable than the AWS stuff, using IAM access roles and accounts and everything over there. So we're doing one of the rare things that we don't often do, and that's shutting down services, because a whole stack has now been shifted off and rewritten in another part of the company. So we're taking the old thing down. We migrated over to the new one already, and part of that is a Couchbase cluster for which we have nightly backups against. The backups themselves are about 130 gigabytes compressed archive of the entire Couchbase cluster. And I'll tell you what, when you end up with a Couchbase cluster that size or larger, doing a restore is a huge pain in the butt. So I've done Couchbase restore just testing purposes. We test our backups, make sure that they actually work. So getting it restored is a good day's worth of work. Well, it's not a lot of work to initially start the restore, but it takes about a day for it to complete and then everything to be up and running where it left off. So, worst case scenario, from when you have to restore, when you figure out you have to restore to when you do restore, we did the restore, you're looking at that time, and let's just say if you're doing daily backups, you could have anywhere from an hour to 12 hours, you know, what, I don't know, whatever. But you get it in that amount of time. So you've lost everything from when you started the backup to when you had the problem, and then lose all the other stuff after that until you get the backup restored. And you say, well, what if you had to restore a backup, how can you actually be running? Well, this is a good point. Why would you be restoring a backup if you weren't running? If you were running, you wouldn't need to restore a backup. But anyway, you're talking a good day and a half worth of work to get that done and back up to where you were close to hopefully the outage. So it's not a fun thing to have to deal with. So what we want to do is archive our backups, Couchbase backup, just the last one that we made. Where it is right now is an AWS bucket, and the bucket life cycle on that is 30 days. So if we stop the service today, the plan was to move the backup over and then be done. So that's 130 gigs that we need to move out. We have 30 days to do it into a Google bucket that doesn't have a life cycle on there, so it's just like an archive spot, so we're dropping it in there for now. The only downside is these the backup nodes that were created only are in AWS. It's a cluster in AWS, so it's just set up for AWS, and then we have our stuff in Google. They don't speak to one another. Like, I don't have an easy way to transfer. I should say, initially I looked at this and didn't have an easy way to transfer. So my thought was, I don't have any AWS accounts that gives me access to that bucket directly. We haven't done a lot. Like, we migrated most everything out of AWS. I don't have any service accounts, and all my permissions when I moved from one group to the other about 3 years ago, I lost a lot of my higher level permissions in AWS because I was no longer part of that team that manages stuff in that way. So I didn't have a service account. The nodes didn't have the access to be able to reach out to Google's services. Wasn't set up for doing that, although I bet you I could. Actually, I could do that. I could set that up. I didn't want to. That's neither here nor there. But it, come to find out, there is Google has a utility, a transfer utility in their console for GCP that would allow you to transfer from a bucket to Google Cloud Storage. And I'm hopefully going to get that going tomorrow, because I took the stupid way out in that I can SCP to the backup node, either backup node, like the one in AWS or any of the backups in Google. So, and I can write to the bucket in Google from my laptop. So I was like, I'm just going to pull it down and transfer it over that way. And completely misunderstanding for some reason the size of this backup. I'm like thinking it's 1.36 gigs, not 136 gigs. So that transfer was going to take a bunch of hours. So, and I was like, whoa, I screwed that up. Why wasn't I paying attention to that? Like, what the hell was I thinking? But I'm hoping that the direct bucket in AWS to Google is going to have a fatter pipe, and the transfer is hopefully going to run faster. We will see what happens. I need a service account, which I put in for AWS, which is why I had to use CloudFormation. So not having touched CloudFormation in about 2 years, trying to go back to it and understanding what I actually need to do was a chore. So that was a pain in the butt. Now, doing something similar on the Google Terraform side, I found a lot more approachable. What I have found, and part of me thinks that the AWS documentation was somewhat similar in this way, but with the Google documentation for Terraform and most of the Google stuff, it seems that you kind of get, you if you hit the documentation in and of itself for Terraform, it'll walk you through, but there's a lot of like linking to more informative pages from like the basic upfront pages. And it's not really like a clear progression. You end up jumping around an awful lot. So you will be reading about service accounts, and next thing you know, you're all the way over in like specific IAM roles because, you know, and you're far away from service accounts now. You're like somewhere else because you wanted to better understand this one section here, which is, you know, very related to this, but it takes you way off, right? So it's just like weird traveling around in a roundabout way to get back to what it is that you need to do. But it's all in there. So when you put it all together, even though you have to dig for it pretty hard, I found Google's Terraform documentation a little better. And there's so there's Google has a couple of ways that you can do stuff with, and Amazon is the same way, but I'm going to talk specifically about Google because I've been using it a lot more familiar. To do that transfer from AWS into a Google storage bucket, you can do it that way. There's a couple other utilities that they have. And I know that you can use the GSUtil, Google Services Utility, to do a similar thing. You just need to set up your configuration file in your home directory to be able to, with the Amazon key and ID and everything. So you could do it through GSUtil. What I like about the console is that I'm doing it through Google Services, it feels like. Although actually, yeah, I guess I would have to be doing it through Google's interface and their service, not on my laptop. And I'm assuming that it probably links in maybe with Dataflow and managing jobs that way. So one of the things that I've been disappointed about, Google has some good stuff, but Google is also has tendency to be a little more of a walled garden in regards to some things. Like they give you utilities and they give you services, and then they give you these great utilities that you can interact with these services, but they make the interaction the easiest strictly through their console and their web interface. Like case in point, exporting data from a Spanner database, there's no easy way to do it. Like you can dump data out of MySQL, you can dump data pretty much out of most relational databases, you can pull data out of Couchbase, whatever, and it's not really that hard. But with Spanner, like if you want to dump the database or make a backup of the database, the only way to do it, unless you're going to write some like application yourself that uses an SDK to interact with Spanner, they provide templates in CloudFormation. So the one that we use and that was the first one to be offered in the past couple of months was Spanner to Avro. And that takes your Spanner database and it dumps it into Avro files and store straight to a Google Cloud Storage bucket, right? And I know I talked about setting all that up before. And they also, they've recently added, I'm not sure if it is left alpha, whether it's still beta, and if it's beta now, but they have similar thing to dump the database to a CSV files into Google Cloud Storage. So they have that kind of tool. Also, like if you wanted to, we use PubSub, and sometimes with PubSub, it's like a messaging queue. Let's say a queue has messages on it, but the consumers of that queue, there's a problem. And so the messages have piled up, and you don't necessarily want to delete the messages. You would ideally like to move the messages somewhere else temporarily. And then once you get the consumers back up and running on that queue, put the messages back on that queue, so move them back. So you can do that fairly easy in with RabbitMQ. But with PubSub, unless you're going to write an application that pulls the messages off the queue and pushes them to another queue, right, which is not the ideal way to do it, you have Google's option, which is you can do that level of transfer through a data flow job. But again, you have to set that up within Google and execute that job. And that requires spinning up services, and the job runs and then it spins them down. So whereas in RabbitMQ, you have a 30-second setup, run, execution, and you're done. With Google Cloud Service PubSub, to do that through a data flow template, it's probably going to take you about 3 or 4 minutes. And most of that is going to be spinning up the nodes. So the way data flow works is you have different templates, which you can define the templates yourself. You run them in the Google data flow, so it'll provision a worker to handle that. It's kind of like spinning up a container or something, or whatever the worker is. So it takes time for the workers to spin up, then they ramp up and run the job, and then the job gets finished. There you go. So when we do Spanner backups, it's a similar process. Usually the backup, by the time like you execute the job and the backup starts running, is usually about a minute and a half to 2 minutes for everything to be provisioned, set up, deployed, and the job to start running. It usually works pretty well. If you can execute the job, you're probably confident that it's going to run and be successful, provided you got all the parameters correct and everything. So it does give you a little bit of simplicity and fun, you know, and you run the jobs on their services, right? So that's nice. Now, of course, you're going to pay for that. But, you know, the flip side right now is you got to write your own application to do that. So that comes back down to what we're doing right now with Spanner stuff. So we're trying to we're going pretty heavily into Spanner. Spanner and PubSub, so all the Google Cloud services right now is we're going pretty heavily into them. The only thing we haven't found a replacement for yet is Couchbase, something that's not going to be astronomically more expensive than running Couchbase ourselves. So that's the downside. If you're going to pay or consume a service, you're probably going to pay a hell of a lot more than if you were running it yourself. The trade-off is that you don't have to necessarily have the expertise to manage those services. You benefit from having somebody who understands those services and can interact with those services, but you don't also need somebody who administers and maintains those services. So you don't need me, right? You don't need me. You give her to me. Like there's a lot more involved with consuming another person's services. Just, you know, having understanding of how to use their service, it helps that to be a little more intimate in some of the other services. Anyway, where was I? Oh, so we want to get more involved in Spanner, and some of the things that we want to do is have a schema migration tool. So when you make a change to the schema, like an update of a table, or altering a table, adding tables, deleting tables, creating indexes, doing interleaving, any kind of change to schema, we want to have a tool that will push out that change to the schema and handle it for us in an automated manner. So we could set it up in development and then just push out the schema changes through our tool in staging and production. And then this tool also will roll back. So you define in your schema change, like, okay, I'm going to add this table, and that's a schema change, and they're timestamp files. So you have like the up, which is adding the table, and then you have a down, which is deleting the table or removing the table. And, you know, say you want to alter a table, and then you need to shift some data around. So you need to create a temp table to do that and shift some data in there, alter the table, and move data back into the new table, how it's been adjusted. So your up would be create that temp table, the DML to manipulate the data into the temp table and stuff, and then write it back to the other table, and then tear down that old table. And, you know, your down is to revert that change. Say you do that and it's not working out the way you expected it. Well, how can you revert that change? Well, you can go in and drop those delete those columns on the table and you're fine. Or if it's adding a new table and it's like, oh, I don't need this table, you can just drop it. So you have the functionality with schema management tool to go through the schema, up file to add to and make changes to, and down file to revert those changes. So you, theoretically, when you're finished, you know, say like a year down the line, you've done many changes to the schema, you could go from where you are all the way back to the beginning, and then from back the beginning all the way back to where you are. Now, granted, if you actually tried to do that, obviously you would lose data in the process, so you wouldn't want to do that, but you could. It gives you the ability to move backwards. So we have the schema migration tool, which is partially written specifically for the project that initially was using Spanner. So now we're moving that out into its own tool. But in addition to that, is we want to be able to create test schemas. So if we want to make significant changes to the database, ideally it would be nice if we could make those changes in a test database and see that the impact is. But in order to do that, you need a way to create test databases and you know, drop schemas in there. So I worked on designing that process recently. And so that's going to, we're leaving it open-ended, but ideally, if you do your job right and you want to make it simple, you build the temp database tables, the hypotheses is what we call them, in the same way that you manage the master or production schema. So you build it that way, and you can make your changes and follow through like that. And you can use a schema migration tool to set all that up and deploy it into the Spanner databases you create. What's nice about Spanner is you have projects. So Google Project is what everything's under, right? So we have like three projects, one in development, one for staging, one for production. And then in those projects, you can have one or more Spanner instances. And a Spanner instance is just an instance of Spanner that you're going to use. You name it, and as part of that project. And then in the instance, you have your Spanner databases. You can have one or more Spanner databases in an instance. So it doesn't really cost you anything to have multiple databases. It's just your overall consumption. So originally, we were going with the idea of setting up temporary tables to do this inside the existing master or production tables, but that would get more confusing. We learned that it doesn't cost us any extra money to spin up another database in an instance. It's just, again, the totality of it. So we can create as many databases as we want. So now that's what I do. I have my tool here, which right now it's a bash script, but it's probably being written, the migration tool is being written under Node. So it'll switch to that. So I just, you know, run my bash script, create that database table, and then I have exported the DDL, which is the database description language, from Google's interface. If you're in the console and you look at the database, the master one, there's a button there that says show the DDL. You grab the DDL from there, dump it into a file. I have a bash script that'll take that DDL and push it out and apply it to my test database. So boom, I got a brand new database, all the tables just like master that I want. I'm good to go on there, and using our schema migration tool. So that's coming along pretty well. But you can have a test database, but if you don't have data in the database, what the hell good does a test database do you? That's the part I'm working on right now, is a way to populate the database that we set up with dummy data. And I will say this, it's been a little more, I thought it was going to be a lot more difficult, but then it turned out to be like, I was like, wow, this really isn't that difficult. And then it's kind of rolled back into getting a little on the complex side. So I've been writing it in Node, so it works pretty well. And I started off and I was able to just, I use a library called Faker. It's Faker. And there's a Faker for Python, for Ruby, for Node. I'm sure there's a Faker. I think Java Faker. It's great little library that creates fake data for you. So if you want a date, you just do like faker.date.recent, and it's going to give you like a recent date. There's random numbers, random words, random, you know, generate random names. It's a very robust suite of tools, and it made that part of it a whole lot easier. Like, how am I going to generate random data? Well, Faker pretty much does everything we need. And that's just one part of it, generating the data. The other part that comes into play is now not only do you need to generate the data, but you need to do it in a relational way, right? You just can't slap dummy data that has no relationship to anything else in the database in there, because that's not the way that you use the database, right? So for instance, I'm working on this planning type database is what we have. So you have like the user list, the contributors, and you have plans, and you have tasks, and you have lists, and you have tables that link that all together. So, you know, obviously you create contributors, but you also need to create like plans, and the plans are created by contributors. So when you create a plan in the database, you know, you fill out a row in the, for the plan in the database, it has to apply to a relevant contributor in the contributors file. And then there's like site codes and stuff. So all these things have relationships between one another. And you need to, you know, really think about that when you're laying your data down, is how can you best represent how a functional production database operates with all that information in there to be able to randomly populate data in that manner, so that it is relational. So that's what I'm working on right now. That is a pretty interesting challenge. What would make this a hell of a lot easier also is, you're like, I'm taking the same tables and data that are in like production or staging or development. Like, it's the same layout. It'd be nice if I could just export the data easily out of the tables in the database and put them into the tables in my new database. And again, if you want to do that, there's no easy way to dump files like you would like a MySQL or Postgres, or, you know, a database that you would manage yourself. The only option I have right now to me to be able to do this without writing a whole application to do it is that those cloud database templates for Dataflow to be able to dump it either to CSV or Avro and then import it back in. But then if you want to import stuff into the database, you got to follow that same procedure. There's export and then there's an import, but they're all data flow templates. So it doesn't lend itself very easily to completing a tool to do that export like that without having to write your own application. So once that piece, that component is finished, and that's coming along, hopefully you'll have that finished in the next couple of days, the start of that. The next process is we have a schema migration tool, management tool, which will allow us to set up a new database in the instance, create the schema in that database, push it up there into there, and then now we have the ability to generate random data in a meaningful way and inject it into the database. Now we need to test it, right? We need to have a way to throw load at the database and how to handle that. Now, what we're probably going to be initially starting with, again, writing it in Node, there are some libraries out there that'll assist with that. We're probably going to start with Mocha and have a way to have it loop through or run a test a number of times. So we need it to like just run queries in a similar way that we run them in our production environment, the way that the application interacts with it, so that we can see as close as possible when we run a test against the master database in development and see how that performs. And then we run the test against the altered schema, the hypothesis schema in development, and see how that performs, and then compare the two and see whether the changes we're making are going to have any kind of impact on the performance of the Spanner database, be it good, bad, or no change at all. So that's what we're working towards, and the challenge on that. And it's been somewhat of a fun experience being able to get into that in between Google Cloud problems. Are you back, Joe?
Yes. Yes, oh. I'm back.
Oh, good. Because I've just been rambling on about Google Cloud versus AWS and some of the things in there and having to deal with both of them.
Well, it's not like I got a lot to talk about.
It's not like you have a lot to talk about?
Exactly. I got hardly anything to talk about. And I already talked about the laptop I worked on today.
Joe, you're a treasure trove of information.
I know, but usually I have to ask questions.
All of you. So here we go, Joe. Here we go. You work with containers, right?
Work with? No.
Oh, you
play
don't?
With at home? Yes.
Do you do it? So, Joe, I don't care if it's at home or at work. So, are you doing? What's your base OS for a container?
I've never built my own.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'd like to.
Well, what containers are you using?
Right now, I'm using the Chrome container and the Transmission VPN RSS container.
Are they from Docker Hub?
Yeah.
What are they running on? Do you know what the base OS on those is?
I don't.
Okay. So, Alpine Linux. Have you ever heard of Alpine Linux?
You know, it sounds familiar.
I know, I've talked about it before. One of the things that we have coming up in Q1, I believe, is they want to migrate applications over to Node 12. So 12.13.1, I think, is the latest stable version of Node. We're currently on 8.9, and I believe 8.9's end of life is this month, so they want to get over to a newer version of Node. And we have been using as our base container all along CentOS, So the CentOS 7 base container. That was managed by our platform engineering team. And in order for us to get like a different version of GNOME, or not GNOME, of Node, what we've done in the past is requested that they pull in the Node RPM package into our custom repo, because it's not available inside of CentOS. There's builds for it, but it's not directly available from the CentOS repos. So what they had recommended, instead of them doing that, they said, if you just go with like Alpine Linux, then you can manage it all yourself and use it from Docker Hub. Alpine Linux, so Node has a bunch of builds in Docker Hub, and they're under three different base containers. Two of them are Debian based. So there's a Debian Jesse container, and then there's a Slim container with Node.js pre-installed, any version that you want. Slim is like pretty much there's nothing. You ain't getting anything else in this container other than the bare basics. Jesse is a little more robust. I guess closer to like just a base install of like a very light but base install container of Debian Jesse, with not a lot of its, you know, Slim is just completely stripped out. And then were you going to say something, Joe?
No, I was just recommending a word.
What word?
Robust.
Robust. Okay. Yeah. So the Debian Jesse container, a little more robust, Slim, completely stripped out. Almost nothing. You get a command prompt and Node.js installed. And
well, isn't that kind of what you want so that you can build it up yourself?
Yes and no. It depends, right? Like, if what you need to get to is essentially like the Jesse container, you might as well just use the Jesse container and avoid having to add all those packages back in, you know, and build right. it. So I really need to look at the differences of, you know, look at it for our needs and what we would have to do for it. Hold that thought, Joe. Hold that thought, because I'll get back to that in a minute. But then there's Alpine, right? Alpine is kind of like very slim, very stripped down, somewhere between slim and just the Jesse container. Alpine is very like, it is one of the hot topics, I guess you could say, in containers maybe. You hear a lot about Alpine Linux, and it's great and is easy to work with. But the thing you got to be aware with Alpine Linux is it's built using Muscle libc, not GNU libc, right? And while Muscle libc and glibc have a lot of compatibility, there's some differences, and most of the Linux projects or Linux software has been developed using glibc, GNU libc, as opposed to Muscle, right? Or any other libc version. Performance-wise, Muscle is about mostly on par and in some cases a little better than GNU libc. It's a little more secure, they say. And the licensing difference is Muscle is, I believe, MIT, and GNU libc is GPL. And there's a great, I should put a link to it in the IRC. There's a comparison between Muscle and glibc, a chart that pretty much all the documentation references. I will put that in the IRC. It's from Etalabs, and they compared not just Muscle and glibc, but like uclibc and dietlibc. So I will drop those in there. And yes, I'm sorry, that's a mistake. Glibc is LGPL 2.1. So that attention was called to me by Graybeard. I apologize for that. For you, Joe, I will put it in the Mumble chat.
Thank you.
There you go.
Now, I do have a question for you.
Oh, go ahead.
Was this brought on by the sale of the Docker Enterprise?
Was what brought on?
All this extra work that you're having to do.
You mean from moving from, so going from our container that we use now and having the node package in our repo to going to like Alpine or whatever?
Yes.
No, it had nothing to do with that. What it basically comes down to is, like I said, we used a container that was managed by our platform engineering team. They put that container together. And in order for us to get the versions of Node that we wanted to use in there, we had to have them package it up into an RPM and make it available under our custom repo because it wasn't available like easily anywhere else like that. Yeah. So instead of them doing that, they basically said, hey, if you go and use like the Node.js image on Docker Hub, you could just manage it all yourself. You don't have to worry about us. You can use whatever versions that they have out there and control all that yourself and not be constrained to what we can offer.
Well, have you noticed any effects from the sale?
No, I don't. I haven't personally. When did the sale happen?
Oh, it was in the news, what, last month? Month before? Hasn't been real long.
I haven't noticed anything. I didn't even notice there was a sale, so there's that. But this, so this, we haven't noticed anything. But what I've been we've been working with has been primarily Google GKE, Google Cloud's Kubernetes engine, and the containers that we've been using, which we push up to Quay, have all been like built in house.
Okay, well, if I remember right, it was Kubernetes that bought it.
Yeah, we haven't noticed anything yet. So we no longer run our own Kubernetes clusters. We're doing Google's Kubernetes. So at least the teams that I'm on and interact with. So we don't, to the best of my knowledge, we don't work directly with Kubernetes at all. At least I don't.
Okay.
So I haven't noticed anything yet, but I will keep an eye out for it. Now, back to the Alpine Linux thing. Because Alpine Linux uses Muscle, libc, you can run into compatibility problems in certain edge case software. And, of course, I have edge case software that I need to deal with. So what we need to do on our base image is we need Node, obviously. We also need the Google and some of it SDK for some of our CI work that we do. We like to use like the same base image. So getting that installed was a little, you know, a little bit different, but it was good. Where we run into a problem is that we use a third-party testing service called Sauce Labs. And they do UI testing for us. And when we do UI testing in our container, some of the things that we, in our CI, I should say, some of the things that we need to have in there is a way to run like headless Chrome. And in order to run headless Chrome, when we were doing it in our container and what somebody had figured out and put together, required a bunch of X libraries and font libraries and stuff like that. So as I was in the process of trying to find the equivalent packages in the Alpine package manager, package system, that's when I really started hitting name differences. Like what was the RPM was not named the same thing in Alpine. And I got all the way down to some fonts which were not in Alpine, but were in the Alpine version I was using, like the stable version, but are in like an alpha version or a beta version. and some of it like still wasn't available. So that seems to like throw a huge monkey wrench into that plan of using Alpine Linux. Also into that, it's like, do we really need all these packages? Well, I don't know. But some people have gotten Headless Chrome or Chromium working in an Alpine image. But the Node suite of applications we use, one of the Node testing suites that requires Google Chrome or Headless Chrome or Headless Firefox or however you want to do it, there's a couple of different versions, is an application or a library called Puppeteer, which has built into it. It will go and pull the driver down for you and install it to use in while the container's running to do the testing, right? But Puppeteer doesn't work very well with Muscle. It's all built on the glib side of things and doesn't know about there being a difference between the libc, so you need a different version of the Headless Chrome driver stuff. So you need to disable Puppeteer from doing that and manually get it yourself. Anyway, so that was like the big problem that we're running into with Alpine. I'm kind of thinking that while we may be able to do this, it's going to be very kludgy. And if we just go to Debbie and Jesse, we should be good. But we'll see. We're going to start with Alpine. But I love Alpine Linux. I love Alpine containers. They're really easy to work with when, you know, everything is available to you and good to go. Just like anything, right? But in this production environment, I would rather stick with something that's easy necessarily than over like a complexity to get a very strict, you know, a little bit more performance or whatever. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But did I answer your question about come back to what you were saying about, I guess, image versions or base?
Yeah, no, you answered. No, I understood the whole, I understand the whole base image concept. I'm looking right now to see which version of Chrome I'm running. It's not exactly headless, but it is running from a Docker container.
Uh-huh.
And this is from CD Rage. So I should be able to find out what his base is from that.
Yeah, so usually when if you look at the Docker file, it'll tell you where to pull in the base from, what the base image is being built from. Unless you're if you pull the container itself, I don't think you'll be able to see inside the container where it was originally pulled from, or I'm not sure you can look back in the information. I don't know how to get it from the container itself. You'd have to find the Docker file that that person used to build their container, and then that will probably lead you back to what the base container is that they used. Unless they built their own container themselves, and that's completely possible.
On his page with the Docker file, it says it's THX Jess. So I'm assuming that's Jesse.
Which one is it, THX?
THX Jess.
Is it just THX?
That's all it says there.
So there's a, if it came from Docker Hub, this is a Chrome, right? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it didn't come from Docker.
Yeah, it's CD Rage Chrome, Google Chrome container. Hold on. Let me see what it says in overview. Yeah, just run Chrome in a container, THX Jess.
You know what you need to do? You need to post a link to it.
Hold on just a second.
I'm excited.
Du, 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 du.
But I don't know. It's you can do a lot of cool things with containers. What is that? Is that your phone?
No, that's actually my freaking laptop for some reason.
Uh-oh. All right, so this is CD Rage Chrome. It's from Debian Sid. So here, I'll post the link that you sent into the IRC so everybody can see too. Everybody has a record. Yay! There we go. So the Docker file says it's from Debian Sid. And I'm going to say Debian Sid. Whoop, not side Sid. I guess it's maybe. I don't know, man. Debian has a lot of them. So this says from Debian : Sid. Which one this is, I don't know. But there's your answer, Joe. Did you leave? But if you look at the Docker file, you can see what's used to build it. It's pretty nice. I should probably put in the Alpine Linux, the node. Let me put in the node.
No, I haven't left yet.
Oh. But do you... So it looks like it's built off a Debian Sid container. Which one of these is Debian Sid? I would have thought that Sid was it, but it... That's not the name of it. From scratch. I don't know. But anyway, I'll put in the node, official node containers right here. These list, you got a choice between Jesse and Slim. Well, there's Debian. I shouldn't have just said Jesse, because there's Stretch, there's Buster. But you have a choice between, like, standard Buster or Slim, or Buster Slim, or in some cases. Anyway, so I'll post the node ones. Did you get anything for Cyber Monday, Joe? I forget.
I did not.
Neither did I.
The only thing I bought for, like, Black Friday online, but was a couple of Echo inputs for the kids.
What's an Echo input?
Well, it's like an Echo Dot without the speaker. You have to hook it to an external speaker, either over Bluetooth or over aux.
Okay.
And I think they were, like, on sale for $14.50. And the kids all got Bluetooth speakers, so...
So they play primarily music from this?
Yeah. And set alarms. And, I don't know, eventually they'll get some... wall outlets that they can name and put in their rooms and be able to turn it on and off with their voice.
Well, that's cool. So they like it?
They're going to like it, right?
Well, my eldest likes hers, but the middle child hasn't hooked it up yet, I don't think.
What are they waiting for?
I don't know, Christmas?
Christmas. Wait, they weren't Christmas presents, were they?
No.
How much did those things run?
Like $14.50 at the time. I don't know how much they are now. Let me see. Echo input. Right now, currently unavailable. That's how much they are.
Wait, where is it? How come I'm looking? I went to Amazon and went into Echo input, and I don't see anything.
Because they're unavailable. Best Buy has them on sale for $10, so I overpaid.
Wait, how much did you pay?
Like $14.50 from Amazon.
Oh. What are they going? Are like they getting rid of them?
I don't know. I mean, they work, and I got mine hooked up to. I had it out in the garage, but the speaker, my Echo Dot, kind of sounds like garbage now. I guess it's blown. So I grabbed my input and my Bluetooth speaker that I had repaired, and I got that set up in the living room instead, and it sounds pretty good. And it's extremely responsive.
So how, I mean, I can imagine, like, how do you set these things up? Like, how do you access it to set it up to pair it to a Bluetooth speaker?
Well, first you hook your phone to the Bluetooth speaker. And then you have to have your input already on your account. And you can do that either straight from Amazon, which is what I did for the kids' ones, or you can go through the process of holding down the button until it starts blinking at you and then connecting to it manually and adding it to your account. Mm-hmm. And then once that's done, you go into the Amazon Alexa settings and devices, and you find the specific device, which is your input, and then you tell it to connect to a Bluetooth speaker, and you point out the speaker on your phone, and then the two pair together. Well, you got to put the Bluetooth speaker back into pairing mode, and then it will connect to it, and that's it.
Huh. So let me make sure I got this correct. You can only do this through an application on a phone, right? Or can you do it through an application on a computer too?
You know, I've never tried it on a computer, so I'm not sure.
How do you find these Bluetooth services on these devices to be?
It depends on the Bluetooth speaker. Or do you mean on the input?
I would guess so, because I don't have, like, my kids and my wife have a Bluetooth speaker, and they seem to work pretty well.
Yeah.
But all my experience with Bluetooth has always been trying to pair shit with a car, and it's been a disaster.
What, trying to pair your phone to the car?
If it's my phone or my media player don't work at all.
Right. Yeah, that's always a pain, but that has more to do with your car than your device in your hand.
I probably figured as much, but I just
never. Yes, it does.
What's up, Jolie?
I just got back to the hotel after a team event. We did one of those escape rooms, and then we went to dinner.
Did you escape?
No, we took one of the hardest rooms there was. We got about 80% of the way through it.
What'd you have for dinner?
Bacon blue cheeseburger.
Where'd you go?
I think it was Sanford Brew Pub, I think.
Oh, nice. Joe.
In Florida.
I wanted to say, your picture you posted of Rich.
Yes.
Okay, so if you... I was commenting about this. to Rich, the woman in the window on the right looks like a painting.
Probably is. I don't know. I'd have to look at the picture.
I was like, wow. That looks like, it just looks like an oil painting or something in the background. Like a Rockwell painting on the there. So it just looks so, it's neat. It's interesting.
Yeah, I had fish tacos. It was Taco Tuesday at the Winter Park Fish Company. So I had two fish tacos that I paid $4 for, believe it or not, and some deep fried cock fritters.
You made a mistake there. The correct way should have been, you had two fish tacos that Rich paid $4 for. You got him to pay.
No, company's paying, dude.
Should have made it.
It's been
anyway.
A good week. It's actually chilly down here. It's like 65 degrees outside when I got back to the hotel. Pretty cold for Florida.
Yeah, he was commenting that too. You know, I don't know. I can't feel your pain given it is 36 over here.
Or 32 at home. Yeah, I know. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's 24 at home. I looked on the way back to the hotel. But then tomorrow, start early. And then I think 1 o'clock we're going over. Our team's going to go over to like it's like a thrift store down here and help do some things around the thrift store as a part of our charity project.
Oh, that's nice.
Yep. You know, so, I mean, lots of good stuff happening.
I was going to say, aren't you going home tomorrow? But then for some reason, I've been thinking it's Thursday all day. I don't know why.
Friday, I'm due to go. Now, the good thing is that I'm skipping. This happens to be the week this office is having their Christmas party. And the boss is like, well, you can change your flight. I'm like, no, I really want to go home. I'm like, it's like yesterday they had a meet and greet and all, basically just them drinking. And I'm like, nah, I'll skip it. I'll go to dinner with my friend Rich.
Now, one thing I have noticed about Bluetooth speakers when they're hooked up to either the dot or the input is that if you hook them up over auxiliary, I guess they have some kind of a battery save mode, and so they take a little bit longer to respond over auxiliary than they do over Bluetooth. So it'll cut off like the first portion of whatever the Amazon device is saying.
Yeah. I usually don't ever have too much of a problem with Bluetooth devices
Bluetooth
in cars.
Works great, but...
Yeah. Like the rental car I got was a 2020 Malibu with like less than 2,000 miles on it. And has probably the most up-to-date Android Auto I've seen. So it's got the new version of it where pretty much Maps is the central thing. And it works pretty well, actually, down here. I've been using it all week. I just wish it worked over Bluetooth.
Why doesn't it?
I don't know. I think they're supposed to make that happen, but I'm not sure if it's actually completely out yet. But, one thing I do like is this car has that auto stop feature. When you come to a light, it'll turn the engine off, right?
Right.
But they got a big fat button right in the middle of the dash that you can turn that off on. So if I wanted to turn it off, no problem. Also, a little trick, if your car doesn't have that, if you come to the stop and the engine shuts off, just lift up off the brake just a little bit and it'll start back up and it usually stays started through the light.
Wait, which car is this?
2020 Malibu, Chevy Malibu.
With the auto shift? Does it have auto shift?
Of course, it's automatic, but yeah.
No, wait. Isn't it called auto shift?
Auto shut off.
No. I'm thinking of what is it that you can put in automatic, the newer automatics, you could put it into like a manual mode and you have the little shifters on the steering column that you could tap. So you don't have to do any clutch, but you could shift like, you know what I'm talking about? Isn't it called auto shift?
They call it Tiptronic transmission, but I don't think it's what they call it anymore. But it does have that, like where it has a plus and a minus button on the gear shift. So if you start off in low, you can actually shift up and down with the button. Not that I ever use it. I just put it in D and go.
There you go. Well,
yeah, but it's a nice car.
Put in the what and go?
In D and grow. Drive, you know, D.
You just Delta. Put in the D and go.
Nice one, Joe.
I couldn't help myself. Yeah. Rich isn't here. I had to put one in for him.
Yeah, you put one in Rich, all right.
Uh-huh. He loved it.
Is that why he had that look on his face when he was dining with Joel?
No, I think it's because I snapped it and he didn't know it was gonna.
Yeah, he said he didn't know you were taking pictures of him.
Right. That's the only one I took, so. But it was nice to get to see Rich. It's been a couple years at least then. And nice going to that. That's one of my favorite places in this area to eat, that Wonder Park Fish Company. It's delicious. It's like, you know, pretty much any kind of fish you can want. It's small. It's real friendly. I walked right in and got a table right away, so, which is pretty awesome.
And they let Rich in?
Oh, no, they didn't let him in. We were outside.
Oh, they said, sorry, you have to eat outside. We don't accept
it. Was nice enough.
Rich in there.
It was nice enough last night. It's colder today. It really got cold today. But he was saying it rained too.
You saying it was in like the 80s last night?
Yesterday, yes. It was between the 80s and 70.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you guys, a completely different topic, but the HPR New Year's show.
Yeah, probably yes. Not.
What about it?
What time were you thinking about getting on? Are you planning on getting on?
I would like to get on. I don't know yet.
Okay.
I didn't get it. I didn't think.
Yeah. I would too, but I don't know if I have time.
I'm trying to. Did they post it yet?
No, I haven't seen anything about it yet, but they've done it every other year.
Yeah, I know they were talking about it on the mailing list, and I didn't know if they posted anything.
If I did anything, it might be right at midnight for an hour or two, and that's it.
Yeah, okay. I might get on. I will get on, but I don't know what time, and I'll be on and off whenever I can be.
Yeah, my family. At least New Year's Eve, we don't really do a whole lot. You know, we just kind of hang around the house, watch the ball drop, you know, which we don't even do that anymore because I can't stand Ryan Seacrest.
But just to say, yes, the 8th annual HPR New Year's Eve show is posted on hackerpublicradio.org.
There you go.
Yes, it's going to start 10 a.m., 5 a.m. Eastern time, so the 10 UTC. 2019, 12/31. So New Year's Eve, December 31st at 10 a.m. UTC.
Now, I know I'm probably going to do probably Saturday morning. I think I'm going to bake some cookies because we have a family gathering.
This Saturday?
Yeah.
Jeez, yeah, it's freaking hard to believe that in 2 weeks. Well,
Christmas is 14 days away, dude. Yeah. It's like, yeah. And I've got 3 gifts bought, and that's it. And I actually still have to go get one thing, actually one thing a piece for each of the 3 that I bought, because I just got like a I got my nieces like a $10 gift card for Starbucks. So I usually like to give something else. If I give a gift card, I don't like to just give a gift card because, you know, I like to spend time to think about gifts I give to my family, you know?
Uh-huh. Now, do you spend most time of my gift cards. Do you spend time and think about it and then dump it in a gift bag or do you wrap it?
Dump it in a gift bag, usually.
Oh, come on. You can't go that extra mile. You spend all that time to pick it out and think about it.
Yeah, well, you know.
I hate gift bags. Oh.
I don't like it either. Yeah, it is an easy button, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it's just called, yeah, it is called being lazy. I agree with that, you know. But it's like, but it's like time, man. Holy crap. It's like, well, I want her to go down to my dad's on a... the 23rd, but it winds up my son's bowling league is then. I think I talked about this before, but they, you know, either the whole team rolls ahead of time, or you have to show up, and or either you show up and bowl, or you find a sub, right? So either the whole team can pre-bowl, or you go, or you find somebody to sub for you. It's, you know, because of be stupid and have league on the day before Christmas Eve. I'm like, okay, whatever. If it was my adult league, we wouldn't have had it, but that's all right though. So we're gonna go down Christmas Eve. No big deal. I mean, it'll probably be nice on the roads because there probably won't hardly be any traffic. This week, I also got dropped my dog off at the vet, and they're going to knock her out and clean her teeth. Do the scrapey scrapey on my puppy's teeth.
Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah, I'm sure she's not going to like it. But anyway, I'm glad I could pop on for a little bit. Oh, I actually do have kind of a little bit of update about Dex. I've been using it all week on the hotel room TV, and it's worked great.
Using what?
The Samsung Dex.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep. Yeah, I brought one of the hubs I got, and I got it plugged into the TV, and I just plug in I usually plug my charger into it, too, at the same time, and then I'd fire it up and use it and have YouTube going on the TV while I'm just dinking around the hotel room. Didn't really use the keyboard for doing much personal things, but next time I travel, I'll probably leave my iPad at home.
But you didn't take your Jide with you?
Hell, that's dead. It died, and I just didn't see the point in fixing it. Because the battery wasn't any good.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention the fact, who knows where I could get the actual battery pack to replace it with, you know?
Right, no. So you've used Dex for watching, like, for actually doing work, or?
No, mostly just for watching YouTube on the TV in the room. Yeah, or... which, actually, in most cases, I was just listening to a live stream, so I don't really watch the video portion of it, so it's more like listening to it.
Did the video portion work?
Yes, it did.
Okay. I know Netflix, yep. I had a problem passing that through.
I'll have to try Netflix, too, just for shits and giggles, to see if it works, but so far I really haven't had too many problems with it. I tell you what, though, having the ring though is kind of cool because I'm actually kind of know when Luke and Misty leave the house now, because the motion detectors will go off every time they leave the house. I watched watched Misty walk the dog.
Hey Joel, how many broken Bluetooth headsets do you have at your house?
None right now.
None right now. Horrible. Next time they break, send them to me.
So one thing, one place we went for breakfast down here, I didn't get it. I saw on the menu they had an omelet with cream cheese in the middle, and I've never seen that before.
That sounds disgusting.
I guess the one of the menu items, yeah, there were several they had on the menu that had that in it, but one of them had a said it was a Florida style omelet. I'm like, oh, okay, that kind of explains it.
I guess they eat their omelets rather disgustingly in Florida.
I'm like, give me some cheddar cheese and bacon. That would be delicious. And what's funny, though, is I'm at a hotel with at a Hampton Inn, and they have free breakfast downstairs. And so far, I've only ate the free breakfast once. And, well, it'll probably end up being twice, because I think Friday I'll probably eat it here before I check out. But both mornings we went out to dinner for breakfast. And then tomorrow she's bringing stuff in. I guess tomorrow's supposed to be the special donut day at Krispy Kreme, like the special flavor they have, whatever that is. I don't know. I guess I'll find out. I don't go to Krispy Kreme on the typical.
Well, I thought my gigabit bricks out in the garage might have been dying, but I think it was actually one of the peripherals attached to it. But if it turns out not to be the case, because it's just randomly like powering off, I'm thinking about buying this as a low-cost replacement. The HP ProDesk 600 G1 Mini QC i5 4590T. It comes out to like $116, I think. Oh, no, $108. $116 with a 500 gigabyte hard drive.
I take it
$8 for a hard drive.
So that's a 4 gigabyte memory. How much? Oh, it only.
That's not like I don't have more RAM floating around here.
Jeez.
Wait, how come? Oh, you can only get the 8 gigabyte with 128 without a drive or 128 gigabyte SSD.
Right, and that really bumps the price.
Why don't they let you get the 500 gigabyte hard drive with it?
I don't know. I guess they're pre-built systems.
Wait, that's ridiculous.
Hold on. I see it
so
right
this
here.
Is your NAS device?
You can get the 500 gigabyte hard. No, this is my garage computer. It's actually hooked up to, like, you know, two TVs.
Wait. So wait a second. When I choose the 8 gigabyte option,
it lets you choose the 500 gigabyte HDD, but you have to be on professional for that to work instead of no operating system.
Wait, okay.
It comes out to like $180.
Well, no, you can get the 8 gigabyte with a 500 gigabyte hard drive.
And no operating system. Oh
yeah,
no. It has to be.
Oh, well, you have to select. To you're right. You're right. I was just
you
looking
have to select
at that.
Professional.
Yeah, you have to select one. Why?
Pre-built systems. I don't know.
Oh, because you know what happened? I originally thought I was like, okay, so you were looking at the 4 gigabyte, 500, and then with no operating, well, you have to No operating.
Yeah, if you get the 500 gig.
So that's $116.
Yeah.
Wait, how did I get it back? How do we get it? How did I get it to 107?
You have to switch them to select. Oh, that's switching it to none in the storage capacity.
Oh, okay, yeah, there, wait. Yeah, okay. All right, I got it. You know, I was wondering at first, I didn't even notice it was HDD on the 500 gig. I'm like, why can you get a 16 gig with a 500 gig hard drive, a 128 gig hard drive, but not a 500 gig? Wouldn't you want more memory? I mean, more storage, but it's SD versus an HDD.
Right. Now, if the 500 gig hard drive wasn't $8 total, I'd say I have plenty of hard drives around here. And plenty of RAM, so I don't care if it's the 4 gig model. I'm going to upgrade it as soon as I set it down, if I end up getting it.
Damn. That sucks that you can't, like, get an 8 gig with 128 gig SSD and no operating system. Or, right. Yeah. You have, and that's like $80 on top of it, right?
Right. Well, if you leave the memory blank and switch it to the 128 gig, you'll see that the only thing available with the 128 gigabyte SSD is the 8 gig model and professional. That's it.
Well, it does say that there's the no operating system one is out of stock.
Right.
So.
Look at Dan looking at it like he's actually going to buy one.
He ain't going to buy one. Joe's going to buy one. He's going to tell us how it is, and I'm going to wish I had
only
one.
Only if my gigabit bricks dies out in the garage.
Yep.
And you can't really complain. The price, you know, $108. And then the processor scores 5,600 on Passmark. A whole lot better than the current garage computer I have.
Uh-huh.
Granted, it's also like four times the size.
And too bad the Tab S6 from Samsung costs $800. Otherwise, that would replace Dan's Jide rather nicely. I can't believe how much they want for that thing.
Which one?
The Samsung Galaxy Tab S6.
Oh. What's it run?
It's, I think it's Android 9, but the nice thing is that you can run Dex right on the tablet. So it's
what did
probably
the Jide run?
It ran Remix OS.
Okay. Was it a phone or a tablet?
It was a tablet.
It was a tablet, okay. Well, if you want a tablet that, you know, runs Linux, then I can make two suggestions, which I've made many times before. The Dell Venue 11 Pro 7130. Or anything basically from the Asus Transformer line.
Yep.
But the Dell, you know, it still runs an i3 or an i5 processor and still hits 2500 itself on Passmark.
Do they make that Dell anymore, like brand new?
It's a later model. I know that there's a 7140, but I don't know if they kept making it after that.
Yep. Well, it's almost 10:30, man.
So yeah.
I'm going to get out of here.
Got to wrap it up. Thank you. Thank you for stopping by, Joe. And thank you for stopping by, Joel. Thank you for coming back, sir. Joe. And thank you for being able to show up, Joel. I hope you have a safe trip back home. And we'll talk to you on Wednesday. And Joe, you have a safe night tonight.
I'm going to try.
No more drinking.
Drinking? Where would I stop that?
There you go. I don't know. Ay, ay, ay. Anything else for the good of the cause?
Nope. Looks like the newest version of the Venue 11 Pro is the 5000 series.
What?
The Dell Venue 11 Pro 5000. I don't know anything about it.
How much does that run?
Good question. Shopping. Looks like it doesn't say. I'm not seeing it.
Still looking?
I'm still looking.
Still looking.
Find a reseller. Nope. That didn't do me any good. Nobody sells it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. You find it. Let us know next week, Joe. Have a great week, everybody. Here it is, your promos, and we'll see you in 7 days. Kick it.
Oh, my.
Oh, Joe. Is Joel still there? Oh, no, he left. Damn it. All right.
God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. Sure, good night. Good night.
A couple days ago.
Is Joe in?
I don't know. Is he on your lap? Listen.
Yeah, seriously. You guys were like chumming up.
Hey, just because we spooned.
He said he might not be on because of the work stuff, so I don't know.
Oh, did he post the spooning pictures when he woke up in the morning? No.
Just the night before.
You know what? I have to say, it was like, what is interesting is that picture that he took.
Yeah.
It almost looks like... Oh, go ahead. What?
Yeah, I wasn't sure he was taking a picture. I thought he was just playing with his phone. I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know.
It looks like he, like, took the picture in front of a green screen and just, like gimped everything else behind it. It's got an interesting lighting. And if you look at the woman in the window to your left, the right in the picture, it almost looks like a painting. Where were you guys? Did we lose him?
Yeah, so this is still some seafood place in Orlando. And the bad part was it was like a block away from my office. I drove the 45 minutes to my apartment and then had to drive like the 45 minutes back to where the seafood place was.
Huh. Now, how come you guys didn't take a picture together?
I didn't even know he was taking a picture, you know?
Did he take it with his drone?
No, he just had his cell phone. He's just playing with his cell phone, and then I'm like, I guess he took a picture. I don't know.
Dun, 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 dun. You should have had him over to your place for some fillets in a red wine reduction sauce. Was that it?
Yeah, I absolutely would do that if this was my house, but it's not my house, and I'm just renting a room here, you know?
How was your daughter's recital last week?
Oh, my God. Those kids, they play so good. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. I can't picture anybody for any amount of money or any amount of talent playing any better than they do. It is unbelievable.
And she plays the violin, right?
No, she's flute.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, flute. Does she plan to continue on with it after high school, like into college and everything?
So, yeah, she does, but that's not going to be her bread money. She plans on doing speech therapy.
Because I sometimes I regret not continuing on with it, and I know like Paige. Pretty much, you know, she might pull out her clarinet and play around with it every so often, but, you know, for how important and how much time and effort and everything to put into it back in high school, and then it's just like, if you don't do, like, I didn't do anything with it in college, and it's just like, you lose the time to do it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So now I'm on Facebook. I see the Winter Park Fish Company. Is where we were at. Yes, the woman, that's so funny. Yeah, it looks like a painting. Doesn't look like a person there. That is funny.
It is pretty neat. I like it.
And it was like, I don't know if it was 7 or 8 o'clock, but it was still like 80 degrees out. It's a little cooler tonight. Let's see. It's 63 right now. So between like this time yesterday and this time today, we got almost a 20 degree swing.
What'd you have for dinner that night?
Oh, damn. It's a seafood place. I had, I think it was some sort of trout. Was it trout or salmon? Maybe it was salmon. No, it wasn't salmon. I don't know. Actually, I really don't know what it was. I just got the low-carb stuff.
So it was a seafood place. Did Joel get a burger or a chicken Caesar salad?
He got fish tacos.
Fish tacos. Oh, good on him.
He had some appetizer. It was like these giant balls. I don't know what they were. And as I'm talking about eating low carb, I'm woofing down a personal pizza.
Pizza Hut personal pizza?
Yes, Pizza Hut personal pizza. I had no idea where there was a pizza place because, you know, I've been low carbing it and stuff like that. And I usually don't eat out, but I had a craving for pizza and I kind of satisfying the crave.
What, you weren't going to go with a cauliflower crust?
Frick no, no.
All right, I guess we better get going, huh? Dun 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 dun. It's 8:37. Is the show number?
Yeah, in like 20 minutes, I'm gonna have to jump on a phone call.
Yeah, you tell them you've done enough.
Dan, it's gonna be just you.
It's never enough.
I'm around, man.
Yeah, Pat's here, man.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry, Pat really hasn't talked a whole lot.
Removing cosmoline from an SKS rifle.
Nah, you use mineral spirits or are you boiling water? Which one's your favorite method?
Mineral spirits. You soak it what you can, the small parts, soak them for like a day, and the big parts, you spray the shit out of them, scrub them with a nylon brush over and over. The stock, the barrel.
What'd you pay for the SKS?
I got a good deal. Classic Firearms had them for $2.99.
I saw that. I'm like, $2.99? That's, you know, if you're getting a really good one, that's okay. But if you're getting...
Dude, man, they haven't been around in years. I mean, you had the Yugos a few years back. They were going for like $4.50.
Oh, no.
The Chinese ones, you haven't seen them for freaking years. These were like supposedly sitting in a warehouse in Albania.
Yeah, I got a Chinese one. I probably paid $2.50 for it, you know?
Yeah, I paid mine, original one, back in the day, like $79 for it. You're laughing. I'm serious.
Isn't that great? You hear all these people, oh, yeah, you know, you used to buy most of the gods for $25.
Dude, I got a freaking Chinese AK for fucking $200.
Which be like $700 now.
At least seven, eight, nine, somewhere in that range, depending on what kind of shape it is and what you got on.
So I met at Kel-Tec. I ordered an RFB Monday.
Still shooting that 22 WMR?
Oh, yeah, that is, I never thought I'd enjoy 22. It is ridiculous fun because
that's like an old person gun, right? For like people that can't handle recoil.
Oh, it doesn't.
They recommend that caliber.
You put a silencer on it, you can't even hear it.
I got a little revolver, one of those little North American charter arms ones.
Yep.
The little five-shot, man. That's a nice little caliber, 22 Magnum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the ammo's ridiculous cheap. It's accurate. I couldn't believe how accurate it is. Once I zeroed it, I was like, holy cow, this thing's a tack driver. I would have never thought that about a rimfire. And... yeah, it looks cool. It's fun to shoot. And it's super cheap. So you don't have, you know, it's like if I'm shooting 100 yards with, you know, what is it? Hornady ELD X Max.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Around, I'm like, all right, I hit the target at 200 yards twice. I'm okay. I'm putting the gun away. I don't want to shoot, you know, because every time you shoot, it's like, all right, that was a dollar. I missed.
Wow, you get a $50 BMG, man. Forget it.
Yeah, right. I want a 50 BMG. Like, all right,
and second of all, what the hell are you going to shoot at? A lot of ranges don't allow us to shoot 50 cal.
You buy a 50 BMG to shoot?
I would. If I had
I know. I would too. So far, I've never had to pay to shoot a 50 BMG.
I was tempted to buy that Walter Special, but like I don't have anywhere to shoot it. Like, none of the public range allow you to shoot them there. I mean, if I had a 50 cal, I'd want to shoot it like a half a mile away, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of ranges, you know, within an hour of me, I could shoot them. But yeah, you're right about that.
Over here, the nearest one.
That's what they make the desert for.
Right.
Well,
right.
this is east of the Mississippi, Joe. So it's like, you know, most of the ranges around here, 100, 200, you know, there is one place near Harrisburg that's like.
That's not even a warm up.
Yeah, 500 yards.
Yeah, I got to drive an hour to shoot 100 yards.
Yeah, yeah. East of the Mississippi, man. It's tough to get long distance.
Now, we did the Creator Summit at a place you can shoot at to a mile. That's Zanesville, Ohio, Thunder Valley.
That's cool.
I didn't, just a whole bunch of things. You know, when you're doing stuff and you're doing video and content and blah, 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 you don't get to... It's like, yeah, I want to shoot a mile, and I didn't.
I got it. I have a Tika 308. Man, that thing's a fucking tack driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 100, yeah, quarter MOA, easy.
Oh, wow. So I got the, I mean, it's low end, but it's accurate. I got the Thompson Center Compass 308. But again, you're not going to run a few rounds through it before it starts getting off. You know, once it warms up, it's going to be off. I did pick up a Palmetto State Armory 20-inch Creedmoor. You know, it's a Gen 3 AR-10 platform.
Oh, that's great. I have one of them. Not that specific, so, but I do have an AR and 6.5. 6.5 is a fucking great caliber.
Yeah, so I haven't, you know, I got a couple of toys and I just haven't put them together or tried them out yet. So, in fact, I got like a... Not, I don't want to say a clone or a knockoff. It's in the box behind me. I just walked in. Kind of like a $20 4K GoPro-ish camera. I was just wondering if it was going to be any good or not. I realize I'm like the Tyver Hoovy of tech. You know, he buys the cheapest car in the country, the cheapest, you know, Maserati in the country, and then it's all busted.